Okay. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to the Tool Docs room. For the next talk, we're going to have Daniel Beck, who's a documentarian and documentation consultant. I've met you in a past life when you were working for the MDN project. And Daniel's going to be talking about MDX, which has been one of the most popular talks also last year. Very much looking forward to it, and I'll hand it over to you, Daniel.
Thank you. Can you all hear me well? Excellent. There are so many of you that care about Markdown. I'm so sorry. My condolences. So I want you to imagine that you're writing a blog post. This is for your own website. You don't have to play by anyone else's rules here. You just get to open your text editor, you get to start writing, and the words are flowing. And I want you to imagine that you need to reference a chart and provide some explanatory text. That is, you want to insert a figure. And I want you to imagine what is like the next thing you're going to type. What are the actual keys you're going to press next? Do we need to?
Yep. Or switching the microphones.
Let's do it. Is that any better?
There's like a
trap
there. Yeah. Can you try this one?
Okay. Here, I'll turn that one off. Let's try that. That is better. Okay. All right. There we have it. Okay. So, what's the next thing you're going to type? While you think about that, I think it's just a nice like history of Markdown that we can look to as maybe inspiration. Anil Dash recently wrote this history of Markdown. It talks about it as this open source success story that a couple hackers build this thing, release it into the world, and now we live in this world of Markdown where everyone's writing Markdown. And he writes that the single biggest source of inspiration for Markdown syntax is the format of plain text email. And unsaid there is that the format of plain text email was never settled. There were no rules, and so our world of Markdown inherits that kind of lawlessness. And so, really, when we have to like confront this thing of like what are the next characters we're going to type, we have lots of options. And I want to know, like, quick show of hands, how many of you type three colons in your mind? Okay, one person, fantastic. How many of you typed curly brace percentage sign? I got a couple. How many of you typed import figure component from figurecomponent.js? Yeah. But somehow we live in this world where Markdown plurals have proliferated, where like the original Markdown or Common Mark, they don't provide figures, so these extended Markdowns have flourished. And so these end up being things that real people have typed. So I've done this three colons in a row, and when I type this out, I cannot help but think of chopped onions. First, if you kind of squint, I think you can kind of see it. There's like the chopped part of the onion and the unchopped part of the onion. Second, onions are delicious. If we're going to have a bunch of Markdown flavors, this is a pretty good mascot. And third, this makes me cry. When we extend Markdown, we take lots of hits. We take hits to readability and writability. So readability, this is kind of ugly to look at like just at a source level. At a writability level, if I'm an author and I am in a new environment, I have to ask myself, what extensions are here? How does this play with the Markdown that I am familiar with? What white space is surprisingly significant? It makes it less secure and less reliable. MDX is like really powerful, but that means it's also very difficult to lock down. You're just like one author from away from like an ill-advised copy and paste from an LLM to a cross-site scripting attack. Reliability takes a hit. Even if it works, you've got this massive set of dependencies. It's not this one Perl script that produces Markdown. It produces HTML for Markdown. It's got this like massive, JavaScript and NPM dependency. And interoperability takes a hit. This is not going to play nice with, say, GitHub or my text editor. And I'm going to get locked in. I can't use Pandoc to print this out. I can't trivially move between content management systems. And so I relate a lot to poor Cassandra here. I'm a writer and a programmer, and that means I know lots of ways to use a semicolon. And in my consulting and freelancing career, I have helped teams build reliable docs, tools, and processes. And several times, I have warned about using a Markdown variant. And all but one time, I've seen that go on to blow up in someone's face, often mine. That one time where it hasn't, it just hasn't happened yet. So I can tell you never extend Markdown, but I know you won't listen, and that's fine. But wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if Markdown already included an extension point that plays nice with existing tools, that doesn't require changing a parser, that's a little familiar, a little readable, a little portable? I've got good news for you. There's three of them. I'm going to tell you about each one. There's more, but like these are three that I know that are pretty suitable. I'm going to show you a contrived example of each. I'm going to assume you're going to be building some kind of artifact from your Markdown, that you're not concerned that much with the source representation, that you are building a website or producing some kind of artifact. Then for each one, I'm going to talk about a kind of tip or trick for working with them. The first are bare links, to treat them as short codes. So in this example, an author wants to insert a newsletter sign-up form in like the middle of the prose, right? So you've reached this kind of point in the article, you want to like drop in a newsletter sign-up form. On the left, I could do it with MDX. I could have this like component, this like HTML-looking thing that I place somewhere. On the right, I've got a bare link. I just have a paragraph break and then a link like this. Depending on your Markdown configuration, you might not even need the angle brackets here. The upside to this is, before I've done anything, this link is clickable. I can click on it in my editor, and it will open up a web page where I can do something. I can sign up for a newsletter. The same cannot be said for this MDX. This plays nice with other tools. So for instance, GitHub's Markdown rendering is going to show me a link that I can click on. And the implementation story here is pretty straightforward. We find a paragraph that contains a link that we know, and we turn it into something else. This is a lot less complicated than all of the many things that MDX is doing. Downside here is pretty limited customization. If you're going to go this route, you kind of have two options. One is to have lots and lots of URLs that do things. So you can have a sort of vanity URL that points to your newsletter sign-up form that's also itself a hint to your tooling to show the big newsletter sign-up form. You can also do this with query parameters, though this is one of those things where you probably only want to do it for URLs that are under your control. You probably don't want to be passing, say, YouTube arbitrary URL parameters. If you're going to do this, please implement it defensively. You're going to want to transform the HTML after you've converted from Markdown to HTML, and then do stuff to the HTML. Find that paragraph that contains the A tag, and do that. To the extent that you're able to avoid tampering with Markdown parsing and the very, very complicated rules there, all the better. The second extension point here are code fences. You can do fancy code fences. On the left here, we have a GitHub flavored Markdown table. I hate writing these. I hate maintaining these. They're kind of nice to look at, I guess, in their source format. But like, I think that's the main thing going for them. On the right here, we have a code fence containing CSV. So in this situation, I've got some configuration information. I've probably dumped it out of a spreadsheet or database anyway. Here, I've just pasted it into the code fence. And then the general strategy here is we cordon off some arbitrary text. We flag it as rich content, and we promote it into something else. And the trick here is in the info string, where you see the three backticks and CSV. This is the start of the info string. That first token is really important. That's what gets you that syntax highlighting in your editor. We want to respect that, but lots of tools will just accept whatever you want on the rest of that line, and they don't care. And so in this case, we can flag it as a pretty table and render it out as a table just like we would for this GitHub flavored Markdown. Forges like GitHub and Codeberg do something quite like this. So GitHub uses this trick to render mermaid diagrams, where if you tell it it's mermaid, it gives you the mermaid diagram. It doesn't actually show you the source. They don't use the info string to control this, but it's pretty close to what I'm suggesting here. Another cool trick you can do with this is Markdown in Markdown. So on the left side, we have this weird block notation to say that, okay, this set of paragraphs is inset, or it's like an aside. from the rest of the text. On the right, we can do the same thing with a code fence and flag it as markdown, and then alert our tools that we actually want to turn that into something else. And all the while, we get the nice syntax highlighting. We don't see these chopped onions in the GitHub rendering. The upside to this whole approach is it plays really nicely with tools. I don't know about you, but I write a lot of code fences. They just kind of show up, and you get a nice gray box with some monospace text, great authoring. It's also a similar story. I know how to do this. I don't have to learn anything new. The downsides here do exist. You've got issues if you have automatic formatters or spell check, other things that might need special attention depending on the actual contents of the code fence. These things aren't insurmountable, but they do require some attention depending on your specific needs. And the implementation story is more complicated. I'll get to that in a second. My big tips for taking this approach is to separate your concerns. So use that info string as the control for display, and then reserve the contents of the code fence for content. You don't want to find yourself, writing a special comment format inside your code fence to control this kind of thing. To the extent that you're able to, again, avoid tampering with the markdown parsing. It's better if, for instance, you have a tool that gives you a document tree out of Markdown, and then you transform that tree and then convert it into HTML or something like that. Again, you don't want to be fighting Markdown itself. And exercise restraint. It is very tempting to invent some custom DSL that goes inside that code fence, and then you're not that far removed from something like MDX anyway. The third extension point is HTML itself. It is tempting to think of writing HTML in Markdown as a kind of failure, but it is not. In contrast to something like restructured text or ASCII doc, Markdown just fundamentally assumes a certain sort of HTML-ishness to it. You don't have to invoke it specifically. You can just start writing HTML. This is an expected behavior. And HTML itself is really extensible. There's data attributes, there's custom elements, there's lots of things you can do to make HTML your own. And so here, I have on the left GitHub's admonition syntax. This one is really hard. It looks like a block quote. It's not a block quote. It has completely different indentation rules from a regular block quote. This is really complicated from an authoring perspective. I'm not even sure what they're doing in terms of implementation. It's kind of scary. I really dislike it. On the right, we've got either a data attribute or a custom element to do something similar. This is a contrived example. I'll show you a better one in just a moment. But first, I'm using this one to acknowledge that there's a real downside here, which is the authoring experience is poorer. The rules around HTML in Markdown are somewhat complicated, especially when you have differences between block-level HTML, HTML that appears on its own line versus HTML that appears in line, in a paragraph. This also has a poor reading experience. It's not so nice to look at. And it's not as tool-friendly as other options. So for instance, Forges will escape some HTML, it just disappears, or it'll render it out as a literal HTML. It's not ideal. That said, this pain is very familiar pain. I know a bit about writing HTML. You probably know a bit about writing HTML. That's a skill that you can actually transfer between projects. It's not ideal, but it's something that you can carry with you. HTML is really powerful. We have lots of ways to do stuff. And HTML is going to probably outlast your career. I cannot say the same thing for your weird little Markdown extension. But I said that Forges will escape this kind of stuff. And this is actually a kind of a nice property of working with raw HTML in Markdown. You can use it in particular for things that are hints. Things that you don't necessarily need to see but make the presentation nicer. So on the left, we've got this cram down syntax that uses the chopped onion, curly brace thing to apply a CSS class to a paragraph. And then on the right, I've used a custom element to do the same thing. Now, a tool might well hide that styling hint. I might see nothing in like a rendered version of that markdown. But that's OK. It's still readable. I can still I still know what's going on there. And I don't see this kind of ugly cram-down specific syntax. If you're going to take this approach, it can be a little bit threatening. There's this sort of impulse of OK, now I need to build all the tools. My editor needs to completely simulate the kind of full environment of building out my website. No. Often, really, what you need is a little bit of CSS to give yourself the clue that you've done the right thing. So while your editor's markdown preview might not let you implement custom markdown parsing or something, it will probably let you give it a little custom CSS where you can apply some styles and throw a red box around something important. Again, I remind you, implement this stuff defensively. If you have to transform things, do it at the level of HTML. There's lots of nice tools for working with HTML. There are rather fewer nice tools for working with Markdown. Please do things to the HTML. If you need to help authors, you kind of need to help authors in this scenario. I do acknowledge that this is a tougher authoring environment. And so to the extent that you're able to give authors hints about, say, what the valid element names, what the valid attributes are, the attribute values, that can be all the difference between this being a really hard thing to work with and something that's just no, it's fine. And sometimes you're going to have to chop some onions. Some use cases are really well justified. If you've got some interactive tool that is just got some pros sprinkled into it, that is a use case where MDX is probably the right thing to do. And I'm not going to judge you on that. Inline markup is really, really hard. There are some things where I don't have a better idea of how to approach that. I don't know if you've all seen Discord has some markdown-ish inline syntax for spoiler text. So you can hide some, you can obscure some text. Hey, I don't know. I don't think I've got something better there. And legacy variants. You probably have extensions that already exist in your world. You got to cope with that. And if you do, whatever the reason that you have to accept a markdown variant, you can give in gracefully. I think the strongest strategy for handling this is going to be with polyglot authoring. So you might default to Common Mark in the kind of general case, and then ask authors to deliberately invoke a markdown variant to opt into that thing. So if you do find yourself, years later, you have to migrate to a new content management system or something like that, you've at least somewhat isolated the more complicated content that needs extra attention. You can also use off-the-shelf variants. If something is widely used, it makes sense to just pick that tool up instead of trying to invent your own. Again, messing with Markdown is really challenging. It has very complicated rules, especially around indentation. Leave it to someone else if you're able to. And if you must build your own, look to what has come before. Have a nice look around. And talk to writers, documentarians. Maybe this is a good place for me to do a little self-promotion. I've worked with a lot of teams to develop authoring experiences that do not make you cry. And I'm available even for very short consultations. If you just need someone to do a reality check, I can help with that. The general thing here is you can check in with people who have been there before. You can, in particular, ask and listen to what writers have to say about the experience of trying to communicate the thing that they're trying to communicate. So I want you to think back to that exercise we did at the beginning where I asked you to imagine what are you going to type next? This is a great way to find a way forward when you do think you need to extend Markdown. So you can look at what writers are doing already. You can ask them to experiment with potential Like, what would you fill in this blank with? And so the right extension, the right syntax, or maybe even just a workaround may already be right under your nose. And so on that note, I invite you to go forth and chop fewer onions.